Companies can play a huge role not only as providers of technology, but also as customers of local output from impoverished regions. When companies like Starbucks, Nike, or The Gap source from low-income communities, they are not creating poverty, as is sometimes alleged, but reducing it. Of course, this is only true if these companies abide by internationally recognized labor standards and human rights principles related to community rights, workers' health, and so on. Thanks to relentless and dedicated pressure by NGOs, the major companies, intent on burnishing their names, are working toward or fulfilling those standards in many important cases. Many NGOs, such as Global Witness, Oxfam, the Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility, Amnesty International, and CERES, are performing a vital and heroic service in exposing companies that continue to abuse the privilege of their position and power. Yet there needs to be a situation of long-term trust and mutual accountability. When companies do the right thing, the watchdog NGO should be prepared to praise them, thereby adding weight and support to the arguments being waged inside those companies. If bad performance is punished, good performance requires reputational rewards. This is a valuable point emphasized by the director of the Novartis Foundation and one of the great leaders in corporate social responsibility, Klaus Leisinger. The worst abuses have come, and continue to come, from the extractive industries, especially hydrocarbons, oil and gas, precious gems, gold, and other sectors, where it is easy for companies to make a fortune by extracting high-value resources at a rapid rate without care for local communities or the physical environment. Oil companies may complain about lawlessness in the Niger Delta, but we must be clear that many among them were themselves agents of lawlessness when they paid massive bribes to national authorities over the heads of impoverished and local communities, and relentlessly cheated on contracts, records of shipments, reports on costs, and other aspects of business operations that affected their taxes and production-sharing arrangements. These efforts are hidden from view except when pried out by aggressive NGO monitors. Part of the hiding has been achieved by excluding Africans from senior ranks in some of the companies. The most important global initiative to address the often egregious practices in this sector is the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, EITI. The basis of the initiative is to support improved governance in resource-rich countries through the verification and full publication of company payments and government revenues from oil, gas, and mining. The EITI prepares a technical source book to support companies and countries seeking to join the Transparency Initiative. As of mid-2007, 14 resource-rich African countries, mainly in West Africa, had joined the initiative. The non-governmental sector. No part of the modern world has played as constructive a role in the challenges of poverty, disease, hunger, and the environment as the NGO sector. The scope of NGO activity, if defined broadly, is absolutely immense. There are millions of NGOs around the world and hundreds of billions of dollars of NGO activity each year. A precise accounting is not possible, but the sector is undeniably vast and growing much faster than the host economies themselves. The sector includes a huge array of institutions, large parts of academia, philanthropic foundations and individuals, activist groups, professional associations, scientific organizations, the social service divisions of religious groups, and many more. The common attributes are that the activities are non-governmental and not-for-profit. NGOs are crucial, of course, precisely because market forces by themselves do not optimally allocate society's resources, especially when it comes to poverty and the global environmental commons. In theory, governments could step in where markets fail to perform, but governments are only effective at covering a part of market failures. Governments are rarely entrepreneurial. They operate best when approaches have been tried and proven successful, and the challenge is to bring them to scale. Then the heft of the government's tax-raising and borrowing abilities can be crucial in providing the needed financing for scale-up. But the ideas about what to do require exploration and entrepreneurship, and that is where the NGOs have played such a vital and unique role. The storied successes of NGOs are far too vast to canvas. Several NGOs have received the Nobel Peace Prize in the past half century, a vivid indicator of the path-breaking leadership that has emerged from the non-governmental sector. We have already discussed the winner in 2006, Muhammad Yunus, whose name is synonymous with microfinance and whose institution, Grameen Bank, is a model of NGO activity throughout the developing world. Wangari Maathai, the 2004 winner, is the founder of Greenbelt, the tree-planting environmental movement in Africa. Jimmy Carter won the 2002 prize, in significant part for guiding the path-breaking work of the Carter Center, an NGO devoted to the promotion of social and economic development. In 1999, Doctors Without Borders won for pioneering the delivery of life-saving health care to the most impoverished and troubled regions of the world. The International Campaign to Ban Landmines won in 1997, and Joseph Rotblat and the Pugwash Conferences on Science and World Affairs won in 1995 for NGO activity devoted to nuclear disarmament. Amnesty International received the prize in 1977 for NGO leadership in putting human rights at the forefront of global political and social awareness. And in 1970, Norman Borlaug won the prize for the Green Revolution technologies he helped to develop and bring to India, all with the backing of the Rockefeller Foundation.